It hasn't happened since the infamous Black Hawk Down battle in 1993. Last month, a U.S. soldier was shot and killed fighting in Somalia. Reports indicate the Navy SEAL was serving right alongside his Somali counterparts, not advising from the operating base, as they battled al-Shabaab militants. New York Times correspondent Jeffrey Gettleman has covered Somalia for years. He even managed to get an interview with Shabaab commanders. Gettleman writes about it in his new memoir, Love Africa. We talked about that new book, but I began by asking him what U.S. Navy SEALs are doing so close to the combat zone in Somalia.
There are hundreds of troops crawling around different parts of Somalia. And the official explanation of what they're doing is that they are advising and assisting Somali forces in their battle against Islamic terrorists. But many of us suspect this is not simply just advice and assistance, that American troops are fighting toe-to-toe with Shabaab militants. And the fact that a Navy SEAL was just killed in combat in a spray of bullets fired at a vehicle pretty much confirms what we had always suspected.
Did this increase in U.S. military in Somalia, did this start under Obama? I mean, and how much has the Trump White House increased the numbers?
U.S. policy towards Somalia hasn't changed president to president. In the last couple of years, we've seen this steady buildup of American special forces in Somalia. And the idea is they are trying to help root out the Shabaab terrorist network. But it's still there. There are bombs going off all the time. Shabaab continue to terrorize people across the country. And they have some local support, which is something that everybody has to reckon with. There are people in Somalia who believe the Shabaab are less corrupt, more efficient, and more trustworthy than their own officials.
Do you have any specific stories about the U.S. troops and what they're doing there?
Well, they're trying to increase the capacity of the Somali forces to be able to protect their own country. But the problem is Somalia hasn't had a functioning central government for more than 25 years. And it's basically a country without a state. It's a space on the map that's shaped like Somalia, but there's no meaningful state there. And the fear is that Somalia could become a launching pad for terrorist groups because it remains chaotic and violent. And so the U.S. government is very interested in what's happening on the ground in these dusty little villages and large forgotten wastes across the Somali desert because it's a perfect place for people to hide out. Mm. And there's a history of that. Two American embassies were blown up in 1998 in East Africa by al-Qaeda terrorists. So the fear is if you don't put a lot of pressure on Somalia, there could be opportunities for terrorists to strike again at American targets.
Jeff, back to this idea that many Somalis support al-Shabaab. You've been in a lot of places where al-Qaeda offshoots have set up shop, Pakistan, Iraq, Somalia, and yet they keep on going despite this global war on terror. What have you learned over the years about why they continue to thrive? Like, what sort of core does their message continue to strike in 2017?
Part of it has to do with state failure, that it's very hard to root out these terrorist groups when you have no alternative. And there's just a vacuum of authority. And people are gravitating for some type of leadership and some type of structure. And the first outfit that arrives to bring a little of that discipline gets some popular support automatically. There's also a kind of pattern of U.S. mistakes. I write about in the book how in 2006, when this Islamic group came to power in Somalia, they were open-minded about working with the American government. I met some of the leaders of the Shabaab. They seemed to truly think that there was a way they could work with the West and bring stability to Somalia. And instead of working with them, the American government just slammed the door in the face. And they just started supporting the, you know, other forces in the region to push these Islamists out. And that created this cycle of chaos and famine, pirates on the high seas. It put Somalia in a deeper tailspin.
You know, in your book, Love Africa, you dig in almost tangentially to a lot of these stories because the book is very personal. But there's one passage about your first job in journalism. It's down in Florida, St. Petersburg, and you write, "In my first year from a town of 7,000, I covered a father and son who nearly killed each other over a meatball, a rodeo rider who punched out a judge, rapes, drownings, fatal car wrecks and murders, et cetera, et cetera. And people say Africa is violent." It sounds like you've considered these two places over the years. What occurs to you when you compare Africa and small town USA?
I kind of feel like I'm a sort of lifetime police reporter wherever I am, whether it's in Central Florida in a little town or in a place like Mogadishu, Somalia, or Iraq. I came to Africa as a young guy when I was 18 years old and was just blown away by the warmth and the welcome and the friendliness and just the vibe that I got walking down the streets of Nairobi or traveling overland to, you know, through rural Tanzania and just feeling connected to people and being around a part of the world where people had so much less than anything I had ever experienced. Yet there was a real connection and spirit between them. Like, for instance, I wrote about the Westgate Mall attack in Kenya,
right,
where some Shabab terrorists came into a mall in Kenya in 2013 and gunned down dozens of innocent people that were just shopping in the mall. But even at that moment, there was this beautiful thing that happened where all these off-duty police officers who are often accused of corruption and acting like thugs ran into the mall and started trying to fight these terrorists with their little pistols and, you know, bad equipment because the Kenyan military and police were nowhere to be found. And these guys saved hundreds of lives. And if it wasn't for their courage, which I would never think I'd be the one saying, you know, these Kenyan police were courageous, there would have been so many more people killed. And they didn't get bonuses or any official recognition. They did this because they cared and they wanted to help defenseless people.
New York Times correspondent Jeffrey Gettleman's new book is called Love Africa, A Memoir of Romance, War, and Survival. Good to speak with you, Jeffrey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Marco.